Welcome to the One Speed MMA podcast with yours truly, Flank Smitty,
Carson Wood,
and
Paul Sheffield.
The one, the only Paul Sheffield.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
From the Poor Sport Report podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Also, comedian, up and coming album. Comedian. Get ready.
Absolutely. Yes.
Carson calls me Paul at least once, what, a month? Mm-hmm. So we figured we'd invite you on so people know, you know, other than me being called by the wrong name, who you are.
Wonderful. I'm glad to be here, guys.
Yeah. So
we'll see at the end of it if you are. Oh. You're going to be grilled.
Why?
I don't know. Seems like a good idea. We got to get this thing wrapped up.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
We gotta
Before
watch
we
some...
get into that, though, I want to... Paul.
Yes, sir.
You just recorded a special, correct?
Absolutely. New comedy album.
I forgot until right now, and so I figured we could talk about it.
Absolutely. You want to talk about it now?
Let's talk about it right now.
Okay,
and get into
sure. Yeah, no, I recorded my fourth album in November. It's called Sanity at its Finest. We are in the final stages of editing.
Like literally today, right?
Ooh.
Hopefully. Mm-hmm. No, my photographer's coming over. We're going to work on the album cover art. Hopefully the final edits of the audio come to me so I can send it to a distributor. We're looking for a mid-February release, and it'll be on iTunes, Spotify, all that stuff. Yeah, I'm really excited, actually. This one has turned out...
Vinyl?
Very good. You know, I might want to do a special edition vinyl.
I do vinyls now.
Vinyl's in right now. You hit that hipster crowd real well.
I've learned, though... Don't do an alt cover. It just causes problems.
You'll never get it from Amazon, no. And they'll just continue to send you Christmas gifts that you can give out to other people.
I'll make the world a deal. After I've sold 10,000 copies of Sanity at its Finest, I'll make a special vinyl edition.
We gotta make it gold.
Shouldn't the publisher already buy like 200,000 to make sure it gets like on the trending charts?
Yeah, we're really not on that level yet.
Speaking of watching, like,
but you could be
The Will Office.
Be. Yeah,
Michael Scott move would be the first thing you should do is get it in vinyl, but the gold edition, and put it on your wall.
Absolutely.
So everybody thinks that you went gold or
no,
platinum
actually,
or whatever the hell.
I actually have had the idea of just putting all four of the album covers on my office wall. I think it's cool.
Yeah, why not?
Nothing special about them, but just make nice vinyl color prints.
What you should do is sneak into a radio station and put it on the wall and see how long it takes them to realize that they've got like John Bon Jovi,
Paul Sheffield.
Yeah. Def Leppard.
Like, huh. No, I'm really excited. This one has turned out a lot better than the other ones as far as the quality of the recording, so I'm very excited about it.
Yes. It's interesting listening to quality of things in the past compared to current times, and what I'm thinking of at this time is like just records and recording in general.
Sure.
So like how mics advance and mixers and all of those crazy things. But
absolutely,
that's a complete digression. So we should...
No, 100%. But no, very
I've
excited.
Had a lot of coffee this morning. And so I'm like...
You're ready.
I'm not shaking like Carson.
Look at my hands.
I don't shake.
They don't shake.
I've only had like a third of a can of this here tea.
I was trying to...
Energy drink.
Record myself on Snapchat yesterday to send nude photos.
To who?
Just joking.
To Scott?
And I just shook. My hand was shaking.
Moving
on. Back to the... What
no,
this
I
want
to hear about you sending nudes,
right.
Nude photos to Scott.
Send nudes.
Send nudes.
In the DM. Slide in there.
Yes, sir.
But no, so yeah, we got to get this thing wrapped up because football's happening today.
Football, yeah. That's true. We were on a tight deadline to make sure that we recorded before the football games came on.
I'm actually really excited for them.
I actually don't know who's playing today.
Oh, man, it's championship weekend.
Oh, no, I know
I'll field
that.
We have the Eagles versus the Vikings, two of our hated rivals.
Is that today?
Yeah.
Or is that tomorrow?
Both of them are today. There's
only
two
today. Both today.
Yep.
Back to back.
Oh, it's
back
Sunday.
It's a doubleheader. It's championship Sunday. Then you have the Patriots and the Jacksonville London Jaguars.
This whole weekend of sports was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
have the Jaguars made it this far before?
No.
Because I remember the Panthers in their like fourth season as a new team made it. Mm-hmm. Pretty far.
They made it to the divisional round. I do not believe... I may be wrong. Actually, I think Tom Coughlin got the Jacksonville Jaguars to the AFC Championship game his first go-around with them. I was not prepared for that question. They may have made it one time to the AFC Championship game, I believe, and I thought they had only made it to the divisional round up until now.
Because I just... From what I remember back in the day when I watched a ton of football was when the Panthers and the Jaguars came in as expansion teams,
sure.
The Panthers did very well. The Jaguars struggled and then did like had one year where it was like, the Jaguars are finally going to do it. And then since then have been pretty atrocious.
Absolutely. And fun little quick story. It's been 10 years. This is what makes it so remarkable. It's 10 years since they've had a winning record. And they interviewed a fan who 11 years ago when they were in the playoffs and wherever they went to got season tickets. And he, since he's been a season ticket holder, this is their first above 500 season. That's and he's nutty. So happy. And that's cool, man. He made it through a decade of losing for this. And like I'm rooting for him.
Sounds like the Browns fans. Well, the thing that I don't understand either, once again, stating that I know very little about football currently. If you ask me about football during the 90s, I can tell you all about it. But everyone hates Bortles. They're all talking about how they're going to bring in another quarterback after this season, that he's basically done. Like, and it's weird to me that there's like, they don't even respect him enough that where he's brought them, that they're like, yeah, they're already shopping for other quarterbacks. And
same thing with Case Keenum, though.
Yeah, but he's like third string, right?
Keenum's a different situation.
But it's still, I mean, in the sense that it's like they're still talking about it openly. Like, if he doesn't win them a Super Bowl, he's pretty much gone. Bortles probably still gets a little bit of leeway after this season, but he's on a short leash, in my opinion.
But isn't that like everybody, right? I mean, Tom Brady came in, he was second string behind.
No, that's way different because he has a ton of pieces around him, and there are a lot of quarterbacks that could do better, in my opinion, and it seems like a lot of other people's. But
will those quarterbacks be available?
No.
That's the question.
What happened to the guy that his life completely imploded into a mess that played for the Browns for a while?
Johnny Manziel?
Yeah, maybe he can
signed a CFL
back.
Contract, actually.
Really?
Yeah, he's in the CFL with Trent Richardson.
And soon to be Eddie Lacy.
Absolutely.
CFL's really stepping up their game.
Yep.
Absolutely.
They're going to try and get their first NFL team here soon.
Are they?
I have no idea.
No. A Canadian NFL team is interesting. But
I it would have to be in what, Toronto?
I mean, it's working in London.
Couldn't be Montreal.
Well, we have the Jacksonville.
That's the thing
England.
I don't understand with Roger Goodell. Get a Mexico City team. Get a Toronto team. If you want to expand borders, how about land borders instead of an ocean? Like,
but I wonder. I feel like everyone outside of the United States is very nationalistic. I mean, in a lot of states and a lot of football teams or whatever are also like state centric, if that's even a word, or I just made
it can
up,
be
right. Right, you're from that state, you have roots there or whatever, that's why you like the teams that you're from. I feel like Mexico City having a lot of American, like, grown players having to go down there to play wouldn't be as big of a draw, if that makes any sense. Where I think that there might be enough players in the UK that could potentially step up and play. I don't know if there's a lot of Latin Americans that are like, football's life.
I don't think they give a damn about where they come from. I just think about soccer. There's only one team that cares about where they come from. Other than that, Club America, their symbol is literally the two continents. They represent two whole continents. They don't care where you come from. All they care about is winning.
Well, they are playing in Mexico City.
No, but
the Cowboys play a game and the Raiders play. You realize
I'm talking an expansion.
Yeah, but I just don't see how the time zone, it doesn't work, man. It's just, I don't know.
It's on the London time zone. But that makes sense only because the time zones are so far off. If you want to watch football in Europe, you have to stay up until really, really late at night. It's like 2-3 in the morning.
Or play at 7:30 in the morning our time.
I'm just sick of ruining our fantasy leagues.
Yeah.
Stupid London. Well, I got tons of time to set my lineup up.
But I'm excited for this week tonight. It's going to be fun.
Well, it's like the culmination of a whole weekend. Like for sports fans, we got Utah sports anyways. We got the Jazz. Mm-hmm. I'm an Arsenal fan, got to watch them. And then we had two awesome MMA cards yesterday. And then we have two NFL games today, which are going to be awesome.
Sports. Sports.
I like sports and I don't care who knows.
It's great. I mean, it's great.
I would like to do a study, an extensive study on which people like which sports. So, like, I feel like there are a lot of MMA fans that like soccer. I feel like there's a lot that like football, but it is what it is. Because I think most people were raised watching either football or baseball. I feel like that's like... but nonetheless, I would like to see... And I bet you Twitter could pull these demographics, right? With the who they follow and what sports they follow, those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
But MMA, I see a lot of people tweeting Saturday mornings after the fights, or Saturday and Sunday mornings before or after the fights, about soccer as well as then watching the fights. But I don't see a lot of them tweeting about football. And then it's the opposite, where a lot of Phoenix Sun fans or whatever will also tweet about MMA. But it seems like they are siloed. It's like, oh, I like MMA and NBA.
You get like a maximum of two sports that you get to watch.
Well, like I like MMA and soccer, but it's not like I'm a diehard baseball fan and football fan and this and that. Oh, and I also like MMA.
The thing is all this people that argue back and forth of which sports are better, everybody has to realize you can only put your attention in so many places. Watching every sport is like literally impossible.
It's impossible.
Unless it's your job, and even then you still watch the highlights.
Right? I have a goal at one point in my life to watch every Utah Jazz game in a season, and it's only going to happen after I'm retired. I just don't ever see all 82. I've never done it. In my height as a child, in the teens with Malone and Stockton, I think I got to like 50 games out of the, and that was when we went to the finals diehard, and I was trying it, but like I had homework or something going on, like my mom wouldn't let me watch, and I have a job and things and comedy. It's just,
thanks mom.
Yeah, but I think my record, I think, is 55 out of the 82.
You can watch
that's impressive.
That's a lot of games.
You can essentially follow two sports in a season, and then one in your off season is what I feel like.
I think it would be impossible to follow baseball unless you were either a diehard or getting paid to do it, because there's games in the middle of the day.
Yeah, no.
There's like 180 games. Like there's not that many, but it's a ridiculous
166,
amount.
166. Yeah. Or 62, I apologize.
You're up there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just imagine...
Most sports. You can usually follow two in a season and then probably one in the off season is how I would probably gauge it. MMA is a little bit different as well, because you never know what their schedule is going to be, and they usually try to plan them around big events.
I think that's actually a really solid point, because with football, I mean, baseball and basketball get a little different, but there's usually basketball on every night. Your team's going to play every 2 to 3 days, depending on that time of year. MMA really is like, cool, we threw together this card, and it's going to be in a month from now. And you didn't know who was going to be signed on, but it's now put together because all of it was done on the back end. Or even with, or, you know, things fall out, right? Where you lose, you know, Yoel Romero had to step out of the Orlando card because he stepped in against Luke Rockhold because Whitaker's out. Like, you don't usually see that. I mean, yeah, you see, you know, you talk about Tom Brady's hand and those type of things, but that game's going to happen no matter what.
Sure.
They get a backup quarterback to go in. It's not going to, I mean, it may shift the betting odds. It may
and the attraction
be to the to the detriment of the Patriots, but that game's still going to happen no matter what.
I would make an argument that that's one thing I like about MMA more.
In the air.
Well, no, if that fighter's not there, the fight doesn't happen. You will see these two fighters at their best. I mean, Carson makes a joke on our podcast about, you know, bring your championships to me. I'll let you know if they're real.
Like, yes.
Derrick Rose tore his ACL when LeBron got his first championship, and they might have beaten them, but they can't without Derrick Rose. But the Bulls kept playing, but their best player's not there, so is it really the Bulls? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers went out this year. Did you really beat the Packers? You know what I mean? Yeah. The games keep happening, but I think it's a detriment to the product itself.
The Eagles, for example, is another one that's going to be They had a lot better chance with Wentz.
Ezekiel Elliott got suspended. We could easily have seen an interdivisional Cowboys-Eagles NFC championship.
Can you imagine delaying it for that?
I think the last time that happened...
Hold on, 6 months.
Last time that happened, I think the Eagles just crushed the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I remember that was like the last time I really watched a game.
And I think the closest thing to MMA, I actually, would be golf. Tiger Woods, with everything that it happened, golf went on, but it really detrimented the product. It's not the same. Tiger would have beaten you. But in MMA, the fight doesn't happen.
I never actually thought about that.
Kind of think that that's something that MMA can hang its hat on. Do you get fights delayed? Yeah, but you get the product you're expecting.
Look at, for example, the big one, which we'll talk about. We'll just talk about it now. Ferguson versus Khabib. That fight's been made 3 times.
Yep.
Two have been pulled out for injury. One because it was literally day of kidney failure for Khabib. And now we finally get it the 4th time. It's 4 years later. Actually, you could actually make an argument. It's better now that they're fighting because they are for sure both in their prime.
Not only that, you've now given them time for people outside of diehard MMA fans to know who they are. And part of that is because they're both tied in with Conor McGregor somehow, right? Khabib wants to fight Conor in Russia, and it's supposed to be the world's biggest thing. Tony Ferguson, you know, is a really good talker, and he's also linked in with Conor McGregor because he technically has Conor McGregor's belt, and there's this, will they strip Conor McGregor? Won't they strip Conor McGregor? They have a whole press conference, and
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life that's coming out of Dana's mouth, apart from probably, well, I guess
not,
he didn't
not
fire.
Not stripping or stripping?
That whole interview, and him, like, harshing the press for trying to get clarification. So, hold on. Are you fighting for they're fighting for the main belt, so you're stripping Conor? I didn't say that. What the hell are you talking about? Interim belts have to go. They have to go.
But like we talked about, right? You have to have something on the line for casuals to have any interest in it whatsoever. I mean, it's just like Aaron Rodgers being out for the Cowboys. I know they have fake belts. What I'm talking about is interim. Interim championships are not for diehard fans. They're to put on a poster for Fox.
We've went to stupid territory where now we're saying there's no such thing as an interim belt there. There's two real belts. You have 155A and you have 155B.
That's the clarification.
It makes no sense.
It does not make... Well, because if you take that belt from Conor McGregor, there's problems with Conor McGregor. There's problem with contract disputes, all of that stuff. As well as when he comes back, you want to make sure that he holds a belt. Because that way, when, you know, Paul sees a poster on the I-15 or a billboard, Conor McGregor's got a belt. And he's always, oh, Conor McGregor's fighting. Oh, and he's got a belt. I'm interested in that.
Does it really pique your interest at all anymore, seeing a belt?
It does. Because that's what's important to him. That's where you're determining who's the best.
I feel like it's March Madness, right? I don't watch college basketball at all. And then March Madness happens. And because it's a bracket and because it's a spectacle, I'm much more interested. And I feel like with Conor McGregor or like Ronda Rousey, those big names specifically, it is always going to be an event. But then if you don't have a belt behind it, if Ronda's not fighting for a belt and it's against a nobody, there's going to be much less interest than even if she's going to lose, they throw her right back into a title fight.
We talked about this on the podcast yesterday a little bit too. Or was it yesterday? Yeah, we did it yesterday, right? Yes, yeah. It was yesterday.
Yeah.
What are your feelings on them taking Rory off the main event and putting the heavyweights there?
I don't agree with that, but I'm also not the promoter. And so
why don't you agree with it?
I don't agree with it because for sport in general, I think that whoever's fighting for a championship should get the top spot.
Okay.
And just like the UFC did with 200, where Nunes and Misha Tate got bumped to the main event, and it ended up being really good. I think those people are fighting for a belt. They've made it, and I think they deserve the respect to headline the card.
So I'll give my 2 cents on it, and then I'll be interested to see Paul's take after he actually watched the fight, and we had talked about it a little bit. So the whole point for me is they need, like you said, nothing matters until you get the March Madness bracket system, and then you can follow that because you know there's something at the end that's what keeps you engaged for a whole month. So in this sense, it gives you that heavyweight Grand Prix. Everybody can put that in their mind. They understand there's a belt at the end of the year or into next year, whenever it is. There's a belt on the line. They can follow that storyline. Mm-hmm. And then underneath that, hopefully they get you to watch some of the other fights, your Aaron Picos, your Benson Hendersons. And now you have more invested into their whole promotion, but it's all on the back of following that. And if you don't put that on the front and center, then people are just going to think it's another fight. They're not going to understand that it. Why is this on? Why is this the main fight if there's no title on the line? There is. We'll see who gets it in a year because it's a bracket.
I understand where you're coming from. And I think the one point that I agree with wholeheartedly is people are going to stay tuned in until that main event. And so you are being able to showcase other fighters before them, because no one knows exactly when they need to tune in or how long they need to wait for. So when they tune in, they're most likely just going to leave it on, and they may see a Rory McDonald or an Aaron Pico fight.
So, Paul, you're a very, very casual fan. You only watch them when I make you watch them, pretty much.
Absolutely correct.
You also have a marketing background. Do you, after seeing it yesterday, does it kind of move the needle for you a little bit more? Are you invested as a casual to watch maybe a couple other of the heavyweight fights leading through the tournament?
Not necessarily. Here's where I will give them credit, and actually the reason it is a good idea. From a marketing standpoint, you're always targeting your key demographic to begin with, mm-hmm. and trying to expand into other markets, right? Mm-hmm. So creating this bracket, creating a system where it whittles down to an overall champion, and then having cards surrounding this bracket, how does that make you as a diehard fan feel?
I don't care about their promotion at all anyways, but when I actually saw,
the setup.
What's that?
Do you like the setup?
He loves
of the bracket.
I do.
He loves it.
And in the kind of case in point, I know you do because you are super excited and told me about it and convinced me to mm-hmm. watch it. And in that respect, that's the only way it's going to work. Mm-hmm. The casual fan, I wouldn't have known about it if it wasn't for Carson Wood, a diehard fan. Now, when I hear about it, okay, There's eight. They're going to go down. There's going to actually be a fight one. That's the only... It tweaked my interest, as I said. And that is where you're going to have a lot more of success. As it gets and builds, no one... Half the... The Super Bowl is the most televised event, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But most people don't care about it, right? The only reason they watch it is because they know someone that's super into it and they want to watch with them. It becomes a party. It becomes an atmosphere. And then they go back onto their lives and there's a very small core group that actually watches the game. I think MMA is trying to duplicate that, and it's a very successful model. From a marketing standpoint, it's great because it got me as a casual fan to tweak my interest based on my diehard fans' interest and selling it to me. And that makes it a successful idea, in my opinion.
I think the other reason it's successful is because enough of those guys have been around long enough, the people who haven't watched MMA in, say, a year or two still are going to remember Chael Sonnen because of Anderson Silva. They're still going to remember Frank Mir because of Brock Lesnar.
That's why it's genius to me, because they got all these old fighters that people have heard about. Where have you heard about
Rampage Jackson?
Rampage Jackson.
A-team, right?
A-team, B-team.
And so that's where I think it's genius, because we all know the heavyweight fights in the Grand Prix, they're not going to be amazing fights. Mm-mm. Except for maybe you have Mir versus Fedor.
Next.
Could be pretty good. Roy Nelson versus, is he fighting Mitrione?
Yeah.
Right off the bat. Those fights could be pretty good. But for the vast majority, and Bader, I guess, they're not going to be amazing fights. Well, but they're making the card below it really good. So I think it's, you're just using the names just to push and give, put your other names over.
Exactly. Absolutely.
The one thing I don't like about it is there's no new names. Like, say someone that they bring in as a heavyweight that is a prospect, they could put them in this tournament and say they go far enough or they win it. You now have someone that has made their way through the legends and built their name.
No. You put them up against the winner at the end of it. And then you build their name off of everybody that's like, oh, he went through all of these guys. We have Frank Mir that went through all of these guys. Who's he fighting next? X person.
Apparently he looked really fat. I didn't see any pictures.
Mir?
Yeah, but they were like, Frank Mir looks like he ate old Frankie Mir. Well, and that's why they did it at heavyweight.
He ate little Nog.
That's why they did it at heavyweight as well, because none of these guys have to cut weight.
Exactly.
None of them have to do much other than talk and show up.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rampage, I feel for Rampage, right? Because I feel like all the rest of these fights, I also feel for Matt Mitrione. Because Fedor and Mir, they're going to have to strike because both of them know enough jiu-jitsu that they're the chance. I mean,
no.
Mir will still try and take down Fedor. I understand. True. He did get arm-barred by Verdum. So,
he got triangled by Verdum.
Was it triangled?
He got triangled, yeah.
I thought he got arm-barred.
He got triangled.
Not that it matters. But I feel like the same thing's going to happen with Mitrione. We saw it on Tough 10 or whatever it was years and years and years ago, because Mitrione's takedown defense wasn't as good as Roy Nelson's takedown, you know, offense in his jiu-jitsu. I think the only fight that I'm really interested in is Bader and Mo, and I think Bader already beat King Mo a long time ago. I'd have to look it up. I should have done that research. But I feel like everyone knew that Chael was going to take down Rampage, and I feel like every other matchup in this is going to be a lot closer than that one was, even though the Rampage was the betting favorite for whatever reason.
Chael's in deep water now for winning that one.
Yeah.
Because he's got to go up against... So Chael's not even a 205er. He's a 185er.
He looks it.
Yeah. And so he's the two guys that he's going up against now. So Fedor Emelianenko is the long contested, like, best heavyweight ever. Like, they call him Dad Bod because he just looks like he would scold you for not mowing the lawn. But then he's just this weird strength that he's like the exact opposite of Francis Ngannou. He doesn't look like a fighter, and all of a sudden he comes out and just rolls people.
It's Rory McDonald's hematoma.
Ugh. Oh, great. His leg.
I've had one of those.
And so Chael, 185er, the two next guys are solid heavyweights, like full on.
How's he
going
to do that?
Wrestling.
So most of them, when they're coming up, they fight in multiple different weight classes. He's probably fought.
Does he have length on either of them?
No.
He's short. He
doesn't have length
stubby.
Or strength? That's a bad combo.
Mm-mm.
But that's why he's in some trouble, because, I mean, his wrestling will be better than Fedor's, but Mir's jiu-jitsu will be better if he gets taken down.
Now, Rampage was bigger, correct?
Yeah,
much bigger.
Where does Rampage stack up as far as weight to the other two?
He's technically a light heavyweight. He's a 205er. And so he's probably, he came in heavy on that one, but he's probably,
witness,
probably 20 pounds lighter than either of those guys normally.
Yeah.
You think?
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, when Frank Mir was fighting Brock Lesnar and those guys, he was cutting to 235, I believe. Mm-hmm. he was cutting to the weight. And so Frank Mir is going to be the only one that they have to worry about actually getting to the heavyweight limit. And apparently he looked really heavy.
I mean, the if Fedor makes it through Frank Mir, the model for Chael would be... So probably the favorite fighter ever for Americans is Dan Henderson.
Yeah.
And he beat Fedor as a really, really light heavyweight. He's a 185er as well. And he came in and he took Fedor's back and he started doing uppercuts from his back, like, so Fedor's on all fours and he's punching up through him and he knocked him out. So that would be Chael's if he could do that. But that's a ways down the ways down. I wanted to talk about this card a little bit real quick because I thought it was
Bellator
really good. We'll stay on Bellator and we'll go over to UFC 220 after. So the big kind of talking point is Aaron Pico boxing shows again.
His technique was really good. He's out there with Freddie Roach. Freddie Roach was with Manny Pacquiao's guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his striking looked a lot better. He was throwing combos. He was switching up body shots and head shots, which a lot of brand new strikers in MMA don't do. They just throw the sweeping overhand right, which we ended up seeing a lot of in the 220 main event.
How often do you see MMA fights ended with liver shots? Punches, like liver punches.
Very little.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a liver shot kick, spinning back kick earlier, which was also just brutal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you don't usually see body punches take somebody out at this high of a level.
It makes, every time I see it, I'm like, that guy's being a bitch. Like, it's like he just got hit in the body.
And the whole body just seizes up.
Yeah, but Have you ever
talked to Jordan about that? He's like, you literally, your body just... seizes up like you can't move.
I work with a guy that's that boxed Golden Glove before, and he said the same thing. He actually texted me last night, and he's like, listen, if I'm ever in a ring and that happens to me, what I'd like you to do is walk in the cage and shoot me in the head and put me out of my misery. It's so weird to me. I get it, because the whole thing is encased in nerves, but it's just like, I've been hit with a ball in the stomach before. I played goalie. You'll be fine. It doesn't look real. It does not look real to me.
Every time I see somebody clinch over in pain from a body punch, I just think that they're in their head, they're thinking, don't shit your pants. Don't shit your pants. Don't shit your pants.
Do you remember that?
Because they're just like, oh, no, don't poop.
That and the leg kicks are so weird to me. Do you remember the
Pat Barry?
No, I was going to say the gym guy that we were talking to in Vegas when we were trying to sign up for a gym down there.
You're talking about leg kicks?
Yeah, we asked him, what was the worst pain you've ever felt in your life? Or what was the worst you've ever been hit? And he's like, there was a leg kick once.
Yeah.
You know, so the sciatic nerve runs behind your leg. You kick that and it like seizes your whole body up.
Well, that's why they say the breaking your femur is the most painful mm-hmm. thing that can happen to
well,
you.
Well, there's so much pressure on your femur. When it breaks, it collapses. So
yeah.
they actually have to pull it back into place.
Don't just lose the leg at that point. Just take it off.
Well, you might if it cuts any of your... in your arteries or anything like that.
It's not a good thing.
A guy told me at your work a couple weeks ago that he had his sciatic nerve removed. He's a liar. You can't do that.
Was it Danny?
No, it was Dave.
That's what I meant. Sorry, Dave Lydier.
Yeah,
that's what I
Dave.
Meant. Sorry, I mean Dave Jameson.
Dave. Beep.
Yeah.
We bleeped
Maybe
it out.
Next time you see him, tap him on the butt and see
I
if he
probably
feels it or
won't.
Not. You're a liar. You felt that.
So Aaron Pico, 37 seconds in, really good.
Chandler.
Yeah, we got Michael Chandler.
I wasn't stoked on that fight, but Chandler now gets his title shot again, and everyone kind of knew he was.
He says he's not
that.
Going to take it. That's what he said before.
Because the Primus dude or whoever has it is a joke, and he shouldn't have won.
Yeah, he's like, that guy's been walking around calling himself a champ. Blah 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 blah. He's not a champ. I'm gonna start taking bigger fights. I've been in around forever. So essentially, this guy. I don't remember exactly what happened, but he blew out his ankle in the middle of a fight and was standing on it.
Jeez. And trying to continue to fight with a blown out ankle.
See, and that's where you lose me.
Where you lose me. He looked like a baby deer. So you see this grown guy, and in his face, all you see is grit and determination to just walk through it. But every time he places his foot down, you see his entire leg just like give.
He's throwing on it too.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
He was still planting it. So basically, he had
and he was calling the guy on too. He kept going like this, like "Come here." The guy was like,
"I'm not coming.
I don't know what the hell to do with this guy."
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Michael Chandler, and that's, I mean, going back to our early discussion about at least you know you're fighting them at their best. Like, There are freak accidents that happen in MMA where, you know, people blow out their knees when they're fighting, or
is it
will
truly an accident?
Break though? Their arm like Paige VanZant.
His was like he stepped back and rolled it. There's some that aren't, like people say that the Anderson Silva one, the infamous break, that, do you remember that?
Yeah.
And they were saying that that was,
quit naming off the fighters I know. You're really killing my list.
Oh yeah, we're gonna be doing a How many fighters does Paul know? You get to use all the ones we've talked about. Just take notes.
That's not fair.
I want to see how many you got in you.
Yeah.
Let's
see if you can regurgitate the knowledge.
Like the Anderson Silva one, kind of an accident. Normally that doesn't happen, but at the same time, like that's the technique Chris Weidman used, and he connected with his
risk
shin.
Reward.
Yeah. But this one really was. He stepped backwards and he stepped weird, and he still almost finished him.
Yeah.
Paige VanZant, also, we didn't talk about that last week. Yeah, she was fighting with a broken arm for two rounds.
Spinning back fist and hit her right with her forearm and broke her arm.
Yeah, and she told her corner in the first round, my arm's broken. And she finished out the two next rounds, too.
And people talk a lot of shit on her, and they didn't believe that she actually broke her arm, and they had to take x-rays and show it.
You could see in the third round.
Well, yeah, but I mean, still, people don't believe. Here's the deal. With the UFC, they have certain fighters
Derek
like
right
Conor.
Derek right now is like, preach, Paige. I get it. Yeah. People don't believe me either.
That's exactly right. So you've got certain people that the UFC brings in, and because of their personality and who they are, they guide them to the top, right? Paige VanZant was on Dancing with the Stars. She's an ex-gymnast. Like, the first time she ever really saw, like, well, she got beat by Rose. She got just destroyed by Rose Namajunas, who's now the champion. So if you go back and really look at that, it's a whole different ballgame now. But Sage Northcutt's another one. The Karate Kid with the blonde hair looks like he belongs to Cobra Kai.
it's a good group.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but these guys, Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, is there anyone else that is like being groomed by the UFC?
Roy Nelson.
CM Punk. Roy Nelson. He's the epitome of the opposite. But nonetheless,
we want to put a sponsor on that.
When these people fail, everybody jumps on board and everybody just shits all over them.
And I like Paige and Sage.
I like them both too, and it's not their fault that the UFC has decided to push them forward. Like, they just happen to be in the right place at the right time. Reebok says she's a pretty girl and she has spunk, so let's give her a whole bunch of stuff and put it on her Instagram. Like, she understands how to market herself. And she's just getting a little bit of help. But then it goes the opposite way, right? Where you have Amanda Nunes. It's like, I'm just not pretty enough. And then it's also kind of bizarre because when she wins the title, there's all of a sudden all of this rainbow UFC stuff, which is marketing. And they're going to make a whole bunch of money off the LGBTQ communities being supportive of each other. But they're still doing it, right? They're still creating the rainbow colored UFC stuff to support their openly lesbian champion.
I just don't see why anybody thinks that they would do anything other than that until it was financially viable for them.
That's key. It has to be financially viable. Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, can you imagine if they were like, I'm trying to think of something else.
I've even had homosexual friends bring this up to me, that companies pandered to the homosexual community because of their outrageous loyalty and, I guess, desire for acceptance, when really the companies don't care at all. And even a couple of my friends that are homosexual, they're like, sometimes actually when someone makes an openly gay commercial, I will actually go and buy a competitor's product because I don't like being pandered to. Just make a good product. Yeah. And the financial viability of it is a very key aspect.
Which is such an interesting concept, because they're usually the ones that are in Ad Age or like Ad Week that are like, oh, L'Oreal makes openly gay commercial to support LGBT community. And it's like, it's a PR. Well,
patronizing
you would hope
is a thing.
You would hope it's not a PR stunt.
Well, no, it's not even LGBT. I don't understand why anybody thinks that anybody would do otherwise. It's like, look at just with movies, how if you take like a big risk, like Sense8. Sense8 was a big one on Netflix. They threw a ton of money at it, and it was supposed to pander to the same community. I know I said I wanted to get outside of that, and then it just, the numbers didn't do well, and so they lost a ton of money on it, and they had to do away with it. Like, there's no reason to take the risk until you know it's going to be beneficial. They're a company.
Absolutely.
They're a company.
Yep.
Like, I don't...
If you know how much manpower goes into those decisions.
Yeah.
And,
the weird part is you've got Dana White, who... I think there's a lot of reasons they do it. Good PR by far being the number one, because you have so many people say what are seen as gay slurs or misogynistic undertones to a lot of fighting. And then Dana White going out and speaking, you know, for Trump's inauguration or whatever it was. Like, they have a lot of they have a lot to make up for. But Dana White's also always been one of those guys that's like, if you're a fighter, you're a fighter. It doesn't matter, you know, what.
And that's the opinion I like.
Yeah. And that's, and I've always appreciated that. And the UFC, I feel, has been ahead of that curve for a while, but they're ahead of that curve because they legitimately just don't care. And so it's not like, hey, we have to make the right decision here. What, which do we choose? Do we go with the LGBTQ community or against it or whatever? Not against it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they just kind of are like, cool, this is what we do. The fighters are their fighters. You know, if they're good, they're good. It doesn't matter. And I think with, just like any female sport, there's probably going to be a higher aptitude. And I'm not even going to say that. Nonetheless, if it's a contact sport, there's going to be a good chance that there is a large amount of, say, a lesbian community that are engaged in it, which is absolutely awesome. But you had to see the writing on the wall 10 years ago when a lot of these Olympians were saying, hey, I'm openly homosexual. I'm going to stop being an Olympian and I'm going to go fight. I mean, it was a normal progression for the UFC to get in front of.
Well, I also feel like there needs to be more ambiguity. When you go in for a job interview as an individual to work for a corporation, they're not allowed to ask you religion, mm-hmm. sexual orientation, not even allowed to ask you your age. Mm-hmm. But yet we're supposed to be able to vet, know, and have all the information about the opinions of people who run a company. It, yep. it shouldn't work that way. Like, yep. everyone grilled Chick-fil-A for their opinion. Who cares? They make good chicken.
Or
who,
not.
Who
Papa John's?
Papa John's. Like, is the product good?
Yep.
Who cares about the rest? Your personal beliefs and opinions shouldn't play into the business factor, in my opinion.
Politics are bleeding way too much into anything.
Exactly.
One, speaking of that, asking Francis Ngannou, which you probably didn't see. So Francis Ngannou, who just fought on 220, so this is a pretty good segue. He's from Cameroon. So he's from Africa. And they asked him, what do you think about what Donald Trump said? Which, one, is difficult, right? If he doesn't know that that's coming, I don't really feel like it's just like, hey, the fight's this weekend. Hey, there's this. Cool. Now give me your on the spot political commentary on the president of the United States. And so Ariel Helwani's Canadian. I mean, he lives in New York. I understand why he asked. I'm glad that he asked the questions, but it caused uproar, right? A lot of people saying, hey, keep politics out of sports, and hey, this, and hey, that. And it's like, you can't, not anymore. You know, not with social media, not with people being able to spout out at any moment their political belief or religious beliefs or whatever it is. Like, sport and politics, it's really bizarre, right? Because you go back to Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was a draft dodger. He was a terrible person. He ran to Canada because he didn't want to go to war. And then he passes away and everyone's like, he was ahead of the curve. You know, he saw that Vietnam was a terrible thing and he got out of it because they weren't fighting for him and what he believed in. And it, like, only time will tell whether you are, you know, a political enemy or a political ally. And so with Papa John's, with the NFL, with the UFC asking questions like this, I'm one of those people that believes that you soon enough, you're not going to be able to separate sports and politics because they're using their platform in order to push whatever they believe in. And to me, that's great. I mean, why not? You put in all of that time and effort and people are actually going to hear what you have to say. Why not use that platform to make social change? But we've gotten a lot of different directions on this podcast.
I know. This is
really, really.
I thought I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, in general, I'm not saying that politics and sports shouldn't be because, I mean, they always will be.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way that we put our best up against each other. And so it's going to be which philosophy, ideology, whatever's going to work out. Anyways, it's everything factored into it. You're representing your country in a lot of ways, and then your politics. And there's just a ton that goes into it. It's always going to be a part of it. The thing that I'm saying is why are you looking for company for moral decisions and guidance on LGBT issues and things like that? And then why would you think that they would promote something like that? Like them just throwing out like rainbow gear before Amanda Nunes, that would seem even more like pandering a little bit. Like, yeah, we got to get these guys. But then when Amanda Nunes comes out, then doing it's being like, we're supporting her more than, I don't know. To me, it's just like, why as a company would they do it beforehand until it was economically viable? And that's not to say that they have an opinion one way or another, but they have to make tons of decisions about tons of different things every day. They're never going to make any decision until it's economically viable. That's all I'm saying on that. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of politics in sports. That's never going to happen. But
no, yeah, no. It's that's the whole thing's interesting. But moving over to UFC 220 with that segue.
There was no segue. We just cut that off.
I did cut it off. Well, we had talked about it for a while.
No, yeah, we need
unless
to get,
you had something else to
no,
no, no,
no,
no, absolutely
on.
Not. Move on.
We definitely do.
I would have done this a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, I was about to go into the Manny Pacquiao and how the hive mind always gets on people that don't agree with what they say, and because everyone's against Trump, then Francis Ngannou was fine saying that, but if it was Obama and he said something negative, but, yeah. So I don't even. It gets into freedom of speech and all kinds of stuff. So let's just.
Yep, I just want to know how you guys. How do you guys feel that the fights lived up to the cards that they were last night?
Bellator, I knew, was just going to be the cluster cuss / mess that it was. And so it was what it was. You know, I didn't focus on it as much as I did UFC 220 because I knew most of those were going to go to decision. That's just kind of how Bellator is at this moment. Undercards usually are knockouts, and then the main event usually go to decision. And so I enjoyed it. It was good to see Rory McDonald get back. It was good to see Douglas Lima put on a legitimate contendership. You know, a lot of people thought that Rory McDonald was just going to run through Douglas Lima like everyone does, you know, coming from the UFC to Bellator. They're just going to run through him, and they haven't. That's been the weirdest thing, that a lot of people from the UFC, who are supposed to be the top organization, have not done well in Bellator. They've lost their first fight, or they've been underwhelming when they're supposed to be the top dog coming in. And so that was really interesting. Michael Chandler, I'm glad to see him getting back on the winning track. We talked about that. And then Chell versus Jackson, man, I just figured it was going to be Chell taking him down and holding him down for.
But did you think it lived up to it?
15 minutes.
Like, I thought it was actually a really good card still.
The
we
card
got our
itself
finishes.
Was very enjoyable, yes.
Rory versus Douglas Lima, even though it was a decision, was great. We kind of talked about that already. I thought that as far as, like, Paul's question goes, I thought it lived up to exactly what we thought it would be.
Yep.
I think it's exactly what Bellator wanted it to be. They got Demi Lovato there. That was important.
She's dating Luke Rockhold.
Very true.
Yeah.
Mm.
Also, Nick Diaz was there.
Was he really?
Taking pictures with Coker.
I didn't see it. Oh, and he was in Bellator.
As far as UFC 220, also kind of was what it was. It was okay. And then the main event and co-main event were really what was
good. No, dude. UFC 220 was awesome. Thinking about it and watching these fights, Thomas Almeida versus Rob Font ended in a knockout. Qatar versus Burgos was the one where he uppercutted him once and then uppercutted him again, and his hair went flying back and he fell down and he knocked him out.
The reason Qatar was good is because he is through and through a Boston guy.
Yeah. And so that to me was an enjoyable fight based on how it ended. And then, I mean, the fight before that was just kind of Shane Burgos being like, hey, come on, let's fight. And then him going down by two uppercuts, that was impressive. Cormier versus Odesmer was exactly what I thought it would be. Odesmer would have to finish within the first round, and if he didn't, DC was going to get hands on him and put him on his back, which he did. He exposed a lot about Odesmer's ground game, because if you lose by crucifix, that's going back to Roy Nelson. That's how he beat Matt Mitrione and, like, everybody on Tough 10, because they didn't have any ground game. He just wrestled them. Crucifix means your arms are out like this, right?
Yeah.
You've got one arm between the person's legs, so they basically are on the opposite side. You're perpendicular. So they've got your one arm holding one arm out, or even just like a shoulder, and then your other arm is between their legs. So you are stuck, and you cannot defend your face. Ooh. In any way, shape, or form. And usually you just get bows dropped right
if
on you.
If you get to that, the fight is usually pretty much over.
The ref just runs in and just...
Because you've got one arm free, and it's usually elbows. And you're not going to get knocked out. You're just going to get...
damage.
It's what you hate. Yep. Going to be a lot of blood there. A lot of cutting.
The damage. But yeah, so... that's
but that fight stops.
Damage. Yeah.
It does stop.
And usually before there's too much damage, usually it's only like 10 to 15 unanswered strikes that they end up calling it. But it's Odesmer is great. And if he would have fought a striker, then there's a good chance that he could be champion. But with DC's wrestling acumen, no one's going to beat him unless they can stay off their back.
From what you saw of the fights, what'd you take away from him?
I felt Chael Rampage was a disappointment. I didn't feel like either could do what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. It was kind of boring. A lot of, not even wrestling, but just holding each other and trying to gain position, which if you're a technical fighter and you liked that, that's fine. I found it to be boring. Yeah. I liked a couple of the fights. Cormier was fun. I felt like Cormier fight was enjoyable, what I saw of it. And then I don't know the names of the two fighters, but the guy that is just built like...
Ngannou.
There you go. Impressive,
yeah.
That he lost. I know it's a weird sentence to say, but it's impressive that he lost in the way that he lost. I mean, he was going for it, and this guy just the other guy,
Stipe Miocic, which is who?
He has
Cleveland.
Cleveland. Yeah. Curse Breaker.
There it is.
Cleveland Curse Breaker.
That was a very. I think that was a great fight, just because it was two conflicting styles, and the guy I thought was going to win lost actually. So,
yeah,
I wouldn't go against him in a cage.
Nope.
I'd look at him and be like, I'm good.
I mean,
just fall on the floor.
Yeah.
Oh, did you guys see that punch?
Take me. But it does show you the mentality still of many MMA fans in general. Just because someone looks like they are the product of a machine building the perfect MMA like person doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to win the fight. Like, I've seen plenty of people that just look like they are tanks and then they get submitted or they get caught or whatever it is. And that's one of the reasons I love MMA, because no matter how much you look like you're made to be an athlete, you can still get beat by somebody that has trained harder or knows your weaknesses better than you do.
Yeah, I think this came more down to game plan than anything. I think it was clearly, like, Stipe could have very easily still lost that in the first if Francis would have even slightly touched him. But weathering the storm there, and he was gassed. And the weird thing was, by the way, not staph infection. He has that pretty much on every fight. I think it's just a scar.
Yeah, a little scar.
The Curtis Blaydes thing is what surprises me. And this is why I've always thought title fights shouldn't be five rounds long. Like, he's never done that before. Why would you, after all of that, be like, yeah, now we should do, because it just messes with your energy. One, you're not supposed to fight for 25 minutes. You're not even supposed to fight for 15 minutes. But I think that they should have just been
three rounds
long.
I would make the argument you're not supposed to fight at all.
not true.
It was actually interesting to me how close the first rounds were in both the Cormier and the Stipe fight. Mm-hmm. Where it was the opponent knowing that he needed to finish that fight within the first round or he was going to be in some trouble.
I don't think Francis thought that. I think he knew he needed to probably finish it in the first two, and then he'd have to kind of figure some other things out. I think Ozdemir really knew he had to. But I think Francis, he was buying into the hype enough. I think he thought, even listening to his post-fight interview last night, he could have won the fight in any round. And he technically, he could have, but
as a heavyweight, you can get anyone
pretty
can
hard.
Get clipped. Yeah, and when you're not even holding your hands up and you looked pretty gassed compared to the guy whose game plan was to go 25 minutes, it's going to be a whole different thing. And we discussed this. So Francis Ngannou was undefeated until last night. That was his first defeat within the octagon. The only other time he got even close to losing was a guy named Curtis Blaydes, who was a wrestler who actually fights Mark Hunt in like 2 weeks. I don't believe he has.
Yeah, he's 11-2. Not in the UFC, but he's lost before.
He is 11-2. You're right. Thank you. So anyway, so Curtis Blaydes, he knew what was coming. Curtis Blaydes is like a Division I wrestler, and that's kind of how he transitioned over. There was both of their first fights in the UFC. They were both coming in as hot prospects. And Francis Ngannou has fought wrestlers and beat them because I think he knew exactly what they were going to be doing, which is trying to take him down and hold him there for, 15 minutes.
It wasn't even for me, like when you were saying that fans just looking at him and thinking that he couldn't lose, because I guess that was kind of me. Mine was more, I pretty much based everything off of when I saw Overeem in all his glory and just greatness and bigness clench with tie up with Francis Ngannou. And just put all of his weight into it and try to throw him. And all you saw was Francis's back tense up, and they didn't move. And I was like, nobody can take him down.
Yeah.
If you're not Curtis Blaydes, you can't take him down. And Stevie had a perfect game plan. Get him tired. Don't try the double leg and just single leg him.
But Alistair's not a wrestler. Alistair is a K-1 kickboxer.
He still can grapple. He's been fighting.
Yeah,
and been in every gym known to man that has heavyweights in it for 20-plus years. And he's strong as hell, even without steroids. To see somebody that big, we saw him ragdoll Brock Lesnar.
Yep, that's true. Do you think that Ngannou eventually wins the belt?
Yeah, 100%.
I agree with that.
Would you count Brock Lesnar as an actual MMA fighter? After all of the disgrace that he's gone through and his upcoming through wrestling, do you count him as an MMA fighter?
You have to remember.
As a diehard fan?
You have to remember, we had to deal with CM Punk, a wrestler who had never done any MMA, getting a fight in the UFC. So you take a God-given athlete, whether it be with steroids or not, in Brock Lesnar, who actually came out and won legitimate fights, I would consider him an MMA fighter even after everything.
Okay.
Why would you ask that, and why would you think that we wouldn't? That's what I want to ask you.
Did you feel it was more of a just a marketing stunt to bring over fans from the WWE, and it wasn't a real MMA fighter? That's all. I mean, I don't know.
He's a division.
All the crazy steroids and everything got vacated, so he had no business being there because.
He never vacated his belt from steroids.
I thought he did.
He lost to Cain Velasquez.
He lost to Cain Velasquez, and then two of his fights after, he like had to have a foot of his intestine removed because he had diverticulitis. And then his last fight with Mark Hunt was essentially an exhibition match, and he got caught for steroids or performance enhancing drugs on that, but there was no belt in line. Anyways, he's still a D1 wrestler. He beat a legend in Randy Couture. He lost to Frank Mir in his first match. And then he came back and beat him
by toe lock. Mm-hmm.
And that's the guy that I think is going to win this Bellator Grand Prix, is Frank Mir. So he's beaten legitimate guys.
Okay, fair enough.
But to your point, it was 100% a PR move. Yeah. That was the kind of the main things that ever happened in the UFC to make it as good as it is now. Stephen Bonner versus Forrest Griffin in the Ultimate Fighter. Obviously, UFC 1 was the big one, but then they saved the UFC that night on Tough. They had a 2-round fight that was the craziest fight that anybody had seen. That was in 2001. Brock Lesnar coming in, and GSP and Anderson, but Brock Lesnar is the one that bumped them into the next era. Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor. He was pivotal in getting the UFC where it is today.
An example of how pivotal he was, I remember him from wrestling, and in my bathroom, one of my brothers, when we were in high school, bought the Men's Health that had Brock Lesnar on the cover talking about him fighting in the UFC. So, I mean, it was the first UFC fighter that was actually on the cover of magazines outside of, like, boxing or MMA-specific ones where people were pitching it in Men's Health, and they might have paid. It might have been a paid placement in Men's Health. I doubt it because he was on the cover. But that's the first time I was like, I'm actually interested to see if this guy can come over from fake wrestling to real fighting.
Kind of going back to the whole Francis Ngannou thing, though, it is interesting in, like, when you talk about if you just take somebody that's built in a lab, because he has an insane reach, too. Like, his arms, it's like him and John Jones are 2 inches off and nobody else. It's like Rudy Gobert being nobody anywhere near his wingspan. It's like the same for both of them in MMA. And so you take this freak athlete that everybody's like, how can you stop him? If he runs at you, you're done. You can't stop him. And then you saw somebody that was probably at the time 50 pounds lighter than him in Cain Velasquez control him. And you're like, how does this guy do it? So he is a legitimate MMA fighter. I don't know if he was necessarily good for the overall sport. Like it's kind of jury still out with Connor, but he beat good guys.
That means I can name seven. Good.
Woo! Here's my 2 cents on it. I like him as an athlete. I think he's awesome. They paid him $13 million, something like that, to come back for his last fight. So apples to oranges, right? If they made more than $13 million on bringing him back, then that's great. It was totally worth it for the overall organization. If they didn't, I would have rather seen that $13 million spent on other athletes to get smaller athletes more pay rather than bringing Brock Lesnar in for one fight for $13 million. So that's my 2 cents.
Let's do this. Let's get how many Paul could name.
Jeez.
Do you want to put a time limit on it? You want to do it in a minute?
No, give me fluidity. As long as I'm naming, I'm naming. But once I stop, I'm probably going
to
be done.
You got 7 minutes to the end of the cast.
Okay. So. No.
Let's see how many. We're going to see how many Paul can name. We decided to set this up. I think you can actually name more than you probably think you can.
I might be able to. We're going to give him this cast.
We're going to give him.
If you're going to account the ones that I.
We're going to give him retired and current fighters.
Yep.
And prospective fighters.
We'll give you nicknames too if you can't remember their names.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So Chuck Liddell.
Yep.
Then we also have John Jones, Daniel Cormier, Brock Lesnar, Holly Holmes, Ronda Rousey, Cyborg, Misha Tate. Those are the only four that I know. Except if you want to call the Karate Hottie. I know her nickname.
There you go. You got it.
You don't remember her name from the challenge?
Michelle?
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know her last name, though.
Watterson.
Watterson.
That's a tough last name, I remember.
And then also you have, if you're going to count CM Punk and Brock Lesnar. Oh, I already did Brock Lesnar. Yeah. Then you have Chael Sonnen, Rampage Jackson. Those are names that I've known. Conor McGregor. Did I say Conor? Conor was number, what, 8?
No, 13? No, we're 13 in.
Nice. Yeah, Conor McGregor. The Cowboy. That's all I know him as is the Cowboy. I don't know.
A lot of them. You've pretty much gotten 3 just by saying Cyborg. You've gotten 2 for saying Cowboy.
You say Pitbull,
if you say Pitbull, you get another 3.
You get all of Brazil.
That's I'm sure I'm missing some. Oh, Anderson Silva. I know Anderson Silva. Yeah. That was the first video I ever saw of MMA. Anderson Silva. That's probably of the ones that I actually would have known before this podcast.
Well done.
14?
I think you're missing one that you knew you could get.
Oh, who am I missing?
Did you say Chuck already?
No, Chuck Liddell was the first one I said. One.
Okay.
Yeah, fair. Chuck was one. So that's how I gauge that basically is if you want a casual fan to watch, one of those 13 people better be on that card.
That's fair.
That's how
I'd watch a Holly fight.
Yeah, that's how
Ronda's
I gauge that.
Retired, right?
Forced retired.
Yeah,
not enough.
I was
head
really
movement.
Disappointed. I was really disappointed. I thought she'd come back for one more. But
I remember
I think she knew
after
it was
getting
done.
Beat up by Nunes.
Yeah.
Oh, no one wants to come back after that.
No one should. I don't understand. So I was talking to Danny. He's super pissed that they're talking about Cyborg versus Amanda Nunes.
I don't know why they. Oh, because they're both Brazilian.
Stupidest mentality in the world. Can you imagine? It's like, oh, you can't have American fighters fighting each other. We don't like it.
When it's just like freaking Vitor.
Stupid mentality, Brazil.
Vitor, Belfort, and Anderson Silva, they only wanted them to fight because they were from different gyms and because they didn't like each other, so it was okay. But, yeah, they... I mean, and it's weird, too, because in London, I mean, people from the UK have to fight each other all the time, and they don't seem to throw as big a fuss. It seems to be a Brazilian mentality.
Yeah, neither do we. Like, we understand, like, no, you... And Brazil's a big enough country.
I heard they didn't even watch any of the seasons of Tough Brazil for that reason. It's only teams of Brazilians.
What?
We are not watching.
We're not doing Brazil on Brazil crime.
Boycott it.
Or fighting.
I mentioned this to you a little bit. I didn't understand that Borrachinha, which is not his name anymore, is the Paulo Costa from Tough 3 that bleached his hair.
I don't know.
The only fight that he's ever lost was against Lyoto in Tough. Other than that, he's the big... You remember Borrachinha, right?
Yeah.
So he's...
Oh, no, yeah. He was supposed to fight Vitor. No. Who's he fighting next?
I can't remember.
He's got a big name next.
But, yeah, I didn't understand that was him. He was actually the only one that liked Chael in that whole thing and was trying to defend him, other than that wasn't on his team. So he was an interesting guy.
Last thing I would like to talk about real quick. What is it? Upcoming events. Oh, Anders. So the ex-Alabama football player who is now in the UFC fighting Lyoto Machida. So we talked about this. So Eric Anders, your boy, is actually from Alabama when they won one of their national championships.
I'm not okay with him ever winning a belt.
Or
Saban has to corner him.
Yeah. Oh, yes. But it's interesting to see a lot of these college kids with wrestling or just athletic backgrounds. It's almost like
Hardy.
It's like CrossFit for people that don't mind getting punched in the face. It's like, cool, I'm already a natural athlete. I put in all the time and effort to do these things to compete at a almost professional level. I can take this, and because I don't mind getting punched in the face, I can just move all that athleticism.
I think they're jazzed
over.
That they know for sure the other person's going to be the same size of them instead of running a slant route across the middle and getting leveled by a guy that's 50 pounds. Wait, we're going to be the same size? I'm in.
Yeah.
Can't be that bad.
He can't get a running start and hit me full speed? Okay.
With me not looking?
It's
going to be great.
With me not looking?
So, I mean, that's a big jump up in competition, but that's one of those, because you come from a different sporting background, that you may be interested in to see
football's surprisingly a big segue for a lot of people. Brendan Schaub, Matt Mitrione, I think, was also...
Brock Lesnar, Goldberg.
He was... Lesnar was Vikings, right?
Yeah, for like a game.
Well, I don't even think he probably... I think he's practice squad. I don't think he ever started or even suited up for... Maybe he did. I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense.
I imagine him just walking on and then being like, you're
huge.
They're
not going to make it in the NFL, and they want to keep using their physical talents.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the translation there is... So I was listening to the podcast with Donaher, No idea. So that one was with Joe Rogan, Don Hurt, and he actually broke down jiu-jitsu really, really impressively. He's like, so for an athlete that's standing up, what is – so like if you take the javelin, he used the javelin as an example. The best – why can they throw it so far? It's because you have explosivity on your feet. Mm-hmm. If you put that same person on their knees, it's them throwing it, it's going to be taken down a ton. So that's why you take the jiu-jitsu game to the ground. Conversely on that, I think that they're so good standing up, NFL athletes, football, college football players, because football is just explosiveness. Mm-hmm. It's you get 5 seconds to do as much as you can instantly, off the line as quick as you can, hitting as hard as you can. And so I think that's why it translates to MMA really well, because you have that freakish power where it's just fast twitch muscles. It can be – you can kind of go around it just by, you know, again, taking them to the ground. But initially on their feet, I think that's why they translate so well to MMA.
It makes sense. It makes actually a lot of sense. I just – it's interesting to me that going back to the CrossFit, it seems like anyone in the CrossFit games when, and anyone in like that competes at the high level, like they're winning medals, it's usually like this person was a Olympic gymnast and then they turned into CrossFit, or this person was a D1 – you know, wide receiver, and then they turn to CrossFit. They seem to have some kind of athletic background first.
Sure.
And then they go and can compete at a high level in another sport, which is crazy to me because I can't compete at any level in a sport to be able to move from sport to sport. And, of course, Francis Ngannou has been doing MMA for, like, 3 years, and he just got a title shot. So when I asked, do you think, does he ever get a belt? It's like, yeah, I mean, this loss will be probably the best thing that happens to him because he most likely will not stay on his back and get taken down like this ever again.
Well, listening to his interview last night, the thing that was most impressive to me is he was saying we had a bad game plan, mm-hmm. and his game plan was better. I learned a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Just seeing how humble he was there, it's like, yeah, he's definitely going to be back for sure.
Awesome. Anything else you guys want to say?
No.
Poor Sport Report, go check them out. Paul's all your comedies on iTunes, and then you got the new
and
stuff
Spotify.
Coming out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Hopefully in February you got your new stuff, and if you're in the Utah area, you perform all the time.
Yeah, Wise Guys. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Bye.